Incorporated.
This paid commercial
may not
represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ, and welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back. I, of course, in Ireland the week before St. Patrick's Day.
That's an exciting time to be there, I'm sure.
Very exciting time. The pubs light up every single night.
Were you lighting up the pubs?
I was up there as an observer. I just got my glass of a Guinness draft and just sat back and observed.
I hear it tastes better over there than it does here.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And, and they have to let the Guinness sit for a while before they serve it. There's
really?
Kind of a whole ritual they go through.
Is there really?
Oh, I had no idea. You just can't put it out like a Bud Light. You've got to go through a whole ritual. And it was really quite nice. And it actually snowed while I was in Ireland.
Did it really? That's an oddity.
I mean, I had no idea there'd be snow there. It was sort of like snow flurries. And so the roads were freezing up. And actually, some of the fountains out in front of the hotels were actually frozen. So it was cold over there, but very enjoyable.
But they serve the beer warm. Don't they serve it room temperature?
It's room temperature. Uh-huh. But the barrels tend to be sitting outside in the storeroom that is cold. So it's a little bit cool, but it's uncooled, if you know what I mean.
You want to talk about why you were over there?
We were looking for some study abroad sites for Stratford University, and we located a few, and we're working on trying to get something going there. We've worked with some universities in that area, and it will be nice if we can, develop the study abroad program for our Stratford students so they can spend some time abroad in Ireland working with businesses over there in externship. Mm-hmm. So I'll have more about that as it develops.
Excellent.
And, of course, it was a heavy, heavy mailbag.
You've been gone.
Mr. Big Voice, wait for your cue. It is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
There we go. He is so anxious. He loves that Profiles in IT. We got a letter from a Bethesda listener. Dear Doc Schertz, I just heard about Walmart's no contracts straight talk plan. It will provide unlimited data and voice for $45 a month. I own an iPhone 5 and just canceled my Verizon service plan and paid their $320 cancellation fee.
Yikes.
How can I use it with the Walmart no contracts straight talk plan? Are there steps anything I need to do first? Thanks, Bethesda listener and fan. Well, the Walmart Straight Talk plan actually is out there. And what they do, they're actually purchasing in bulk rates the services from carriers. And then they simply remarket those products. And so the Walmart Straight Talk plan has actually got contracts with both AT&T and Verizon. And you can go to Walmart and you can get a CDMA phone, and then you can sign up for the Verizon network, but you're actually using Straight Talk. And or you could, if you get the GSM phone, you'll get the AT&T network. That's pretty much how it works. It's just a repackaging deal. It's a no contract thing, so that it's quite convenient. Now, they say for $45 it's unlimited data and voice. Actually, I've been checking on that. It's really not unlimited data and voice. When you get to 2 gigabytes download in your data, they throttle you. It's called the soft cutoff. You do have unlimited data. It's just that the data that you receive above 2 gigabytes is so slow that you probably wouldn't be happy with it. Mm-hmm. So they're using it, that's throttling it. I think Walmart would be better off simply, posting the fact that there's kind of a soft limit. when people went back and talked to them, they said it's not always 2 gigabytes. I kind of look at what you're doing, and if you're listening to a lot of videos and really burning it up quickly, they'll throttle you sooner rather than later. So they said it's a kind of a soft barrier, but it is truly not unlimited. Now, what they've done, though, you have to buy the phone. You have to buy the phone for $650.
Oh, wow.
Because you're not getting the subsidy. But what Walmart does, it's very good. If you get a Walmart credit card, they'll let you put it on installments at $25 a month, interest-free.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it. You get your plan from Walmart. There's no contract for the data voice plan. So you pay $45 a month plus your $25 a month for your phone payment. So for $70 a month, and then after 2 years, you own your phone because, of course, it's paid off, and then you just go back to $45 a month. I mean, it's not really a bad deal, I think, and it's cheaper than if you'd go straight to Verizon or straight to AT&T. So it's not really too bad of a plan. Now, if you want to use your own phone, it has to be unlocked. So if you can unlock your phone, if you've got a GSM phone, you can unlock it. You can just pop in the Walmart Straight Talk SIM card. If you're running a CDMA phone, like with Verizon, they actually have to reprogram it. There's no SIM card. And that requires that your carrier permit that to happen. So one thing that, my Bethesda listener, when you paid your $320 cancellation fee, you bought the rest of your phone. See, they're more or less charging you $25 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And the remaining time on the contract, you bought. So now you really own your phone. So you could go back to Verizon and ask them to unlock it, the GSM part. Because if you have the Verizon phone, you've got both GSM as well as CDMA. You could ask them to unlock the GSM portion of it for you. And you could always then sign up and pop in a SIM card for Walmart Straight Talk and run it as a GSM. Or you could, if Verizon will allow you to reprogram the phone as a CDMA and let you back on the network, you could do that. So you should be able to transfer your phone. But I've never seen a guarantee of transfer for the CDMA. They only talked about transferring it if you had unlocked GSM.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually not too bad of a plan. I think it's not a bad idea. They've got all kinds of remarketed networks over in Europe. They've been doing that for years. Like I got a 3-SIM card, and they were just remarketing the O2 network, which was remarketing the Vodafone network. So there's all this remarketing of networks, and they're trying to go after a different group. But it's actually a pretty good plan for those of you that are not heavy data users.
Interesting. I always like when your voice goes requires. I know that there's some big butt coming.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so that and I did quite a bit of research on that, and people are reasonably happy with it.
Uh-huh.
Now, what I would recommend is that if you're going to buy the phone from Walmart, I would buy the CDMA phone because it comes with both CDMA as well as GSM. It's got them both. That's the beauty of it. And the Verizon network has a little better coverage than the AT&T network in the U.S. And since it's unlocked, you can use the GSM portion when you travel internationally. So that's what I've got. My iPhone's got both. It's a Verizon phone that's got both features, and so I just... And Verizon did unlock the GSM part, so I was using my 3-SIM card when I was in Ireland, which was really nice.
Yeah.
Let me just give an aside how that
Please.
Worked. It was kind of interesting. I paid 20 euros for the 3-SIM card.
Now, do you use different SIM cards depending on what country you go
to? Yeah, depending on what country.
Uh-huh.
Because I want a local SIM card, so it's a local call.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that for 20 euros, that gave me data for 30 days for my iPhone.
So you throw these out when you're done with them?
No, I save it.
You can hang on to the SIM card and just recharge it when you...
Yeah, I save it. And uh-huh. They'll normally keep it. I mean,
how many of these things do you have?
I've got a little plastic box full of SIM cards.
How do you remember which goes to which country?
Sometimes I have to experiment, to tell you the truth. Because after a while, you know, one SIM card looks like another SIM card.
Of course they do.
So I kind of experiment until I figure it out. And so what happened was when you're in Ireland, incoming calls are free. And they were giving me unlimited data, and so even when my voice, even when my 20 euros was used up on voice calls, I still received data because I'd bought the data plan for 30 days, and I was still getting text messages, and I could get incoming phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, it was only 20 euros for the whole time I was there. And for, you know, local calls, it's just like 1 or 2 cents a minute. Now, the trouble is if I call back to the U.S., they charge me 35 cents a minute. So what I do, if I want to talk to somebody in the U.S., I text them. I say, give me a phone call.
Ah.
They call me, and it's not charged on my SIM card.
How about that?
So there you go. It's
you're just a ninja with that stuff.
That's right. I'd love to do that. We got an email from Richard Caputo. Good day, Dr. Schertz. I just checked the Stratford website, and I'm happy that the radio show can be heard here in California.
It can be heard anywhere.
That's right.
Like in Ecuador.
The radio talk show has always been one of the most informative and entertaining show to my ears. Richard Caputo, he's actually one of our graduates.
Is he really?
And he's a former instructor. He's now teaching information assurance out at a school in California. And I always like to hear from our
That's
graduates.
That's pretty cool when you get to hear from
And so he's because he used to listen to Tech Talk while he was here in Virginia. And now he's... Maybe that was before I started the podcast.
Well,
and now I just discovered the podcast.
Well, this is important because now you can tell your listeners, of course, that you don't have to be in D.C. How can people listen to us when you're not here?
When you're not here, of course. So you can also listen over the Internet. If you want to listen to live stream, you can go to federalnewsradio.com and listen to the live stream. Or you can go to Tech Talk. Online.com, and you can sign up for the podcast.
And, of course, you can listen to it anytime you want that.
You can listen to it. You don't have to get up at 9 a.m. Saturday morning, which, of course, is always problematic for people that are partying out Friday night.
Or in Ireland drinking warm Guinness.
Well, you notice I didn't do the show when I was in Ireland.
No, I noticed that. It would have been late in the afternoon, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they're 4 hours. They're 4 hours ahead of us.
You could have done it.
I could have done it. No, it would have been 4 hours. It would have been 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
We've tried to do that before on Skype when you were in China. Was it China?
I know, but I just...
It was risky.
I just didn't want to do that when I was, you know, St. Patty's Day.
Yeah,
that was...
Even more risky.
Would have been a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
We got an email from Alex. Dear Tech Talk, why was my computer locked by cyber cops when I did not do anything illegally? To unlock it, I'm asked for a fine of $100. How do I know it's not a scam? Thanks, Alex. Okay, we had something. We had the FBI, malware that Veros wrote in a few weeks ago. This is another malware case, and it's a malware scam. The cyber cops are scammers. They're actually hackers. And what they're trying to do is extort $100 from you. You've picked up this malware infection probably from a website or you downloaded something. Unfortunately, it could be somewhat difficult to remove. My suggestion is that you run a program such as Windows Defender Offline to scan for computer malware before it actually boots. So you can, in other words, what you do is you would go to another computer, go to the Windows Defender site, and you can go to Windows Defender Offline, and that will then create a bootable DVD or CD. And then what you'll do is you'll boot your computer on that DVD or CD, and then it boots up on Windows Defender Offline, and it can scan your hard drive without the malware being installed, so it will locate the malware and remove it. And people have done that successfully. So, best of luck, but definitely do not pay $100.
No.
We got an email from Roger in Alexandria. Dear Doc and Jim, my router goes offline quite often. Now, the way I usually resolve this is to unplug it and then plug it back in, and then I get right back online. What causes this sudden loss of Internet connection through my router? Do you think are there any ways to prevent this from happening again? Love the show, Roger. Well, Roger, you've got some kind of connectivity problem. I mean, a few years ago I had similar problems. I was an unreliable Internet connection, and there are a couple of things that you can look at here. First, it could be that your router is not functioning properly. It's just losing the connection because there's kind of a keep alive function to keep a connection alive, and maybe it's not doing the keep alive function in order to stay alive. And so it could be a router problem. Now, or it could be a line problem where you don't have sufficient signal to noise and you periodically are losing your signal. And it could be that you've got a loose connection for the telco wire coming into the house, or maybe the wires got wet. That's what actually happened to me when I had these connectivity problems a few years ago. And I was actually running cable at the time. Now I've got Fios. And it turned out there was a bad connection where the cable had been buried underground, and there was a bad connection there. It hadn't been installed correctly way back in the very beginning. And actually I worked with Cox Cable, and they ran signal to noise measurements, and they determined that there was that my connection to the internet was lossy. And then we actually repaired that cable, and it worked fine. They also allowed me to take my router back down to Cox and swap it out just to see what was the router problem. Because when you swap it and put in a new router, they've got to register the new physical address. You just can't pop one in. It won't be authorized. So your ISP will work with you on that, and I think it's probably one of those two things. We got an email from Steve. Dear Tech Talk, I have Windows 7 on my PC, and my browser's Internet Explorer 9. I'm using an external hard drive to back up the files and hold the files from my previous computer. Now, my computer shows that my 750 gigabyte external hard drive is full. Though I've added up all the files that I think I put on there, there's only 70 gigabytes on it. Now, I deleted 10 gigs of duplicate files, but it still reads full, and there's only a few megabytes left. What's the problem here? Thanks, Steve. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that maybe you had when you were using that, recycle bin, when you were using that previously, maybe you need to empty the recycle bin, and there could be files that have been deleted but not really deleted sitting in the recycle bin. And so you might want to just try that, first of all. Now, secondly, you may have a lot of hidden files. So you can actually, when you're using Windows Explorer, you can uncheck the option under Windows Explorer that says don't hide hidden files. You can do that you right-click under the properties. And then you can look at all the different hidden files that are there to see what's on there that you don't know about. Because it could be that if you had a prior operating system installed, there are a whole lot of hidden files that you just simply don't know about. But they're there, but you can't see them. You can unhide them, and you can look at them quite nicely. Now, a very nice way to analyze what's on the hard drive is a program called T-Size, Tree Size, T-R-E-E Size. You can get that from Jam Software. And I'll post the link, but you can just actually Google Tree Size. You can download Tree Size, and then you can run it, and it will then analyze all the files on the hard drive, and tell you exactly what files are eating up all the space, and then you'll know exactly where to go after. And it takes, I ran that this morning just to sort of see how fast it was. I was able to scan my whole hard drive in about less than 10 seconds, and it gives you a nice map of how all the files are doing there. So that's probably what I would do. Just try Tree Size. Google it, and I'll have the full link posted later on in the show. We got an email from Graham in Ireland. He's one of the hotel managers over there that I've been working with for this study abroad program. Dear Tech Talk, I just got an iPhone 5 and love its feel and features, but I'm using the navigation system that came with it. It works pretty well, except in the city. Yesterday I was trying to find the Shelburne Hotel, and it directed me to some seedy part of town about 10 kilometers from the Shelburne. Now, my last phone was an Android. I didn't have this problem. What can I do? Thanks, Graham O'Toole, Virginia, Ireland. He's the guy at the Park Hotel. Well, actually, I asked Graham to write this letter because I was in the car with him.
And you wound up in the seedy neighborhood.
I said, Graham, exactly where are you taking me? I was in the car with them, and we locked the doors. We were getting a little worried there.
It didn't stop at stoplights.
No. So what actually happened? The map program that comes with Apple, many times it's just not accurate in cities. They sort of rush to get it out, and there are areas where they're just extremely inaccurate. They're trying to improve the accuracy as they go through the system, but they've got real problems. When you had the Android phone, you were using Google Maps. Now, the good news is, Graham, you can download Google Maps right to your iPhone, and then you'll have no trouble. And in fact, what we did, since I was sitting with Graham there, he downloaded
in the car in a bad neighborhood.
We were in the bad neighborhood. He pulled over. He downloaded Google Maps, and then we put in the address for the Shelburne Hotel. It took us straight to the Shelburne.
Wow,
perfectly. I mean, it was just we were there without any trouble at all. So I think Graham is actually a convert to Google Maps now. Plus, he also likes the voice on Google Maps than he likes the voice on Apple Maps.
I've always liked Google Maps, too.
Yeah, so there you go. That was a sort of a solicited email, if you will, because I thought it'd just be a nice topic.
Well, you're a multitasker, so yes. You're doing more over there than just, I was going to say a radio show, but this is not a radio show.
No, this is not a radio show. No, this is a classroom of the airwaves.
That's correct. You're also monitoring Facebook?
Oh, yeah, I'm monitoring Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/TechTalkOnline, and I'll be watching for your comments during the show.
And how would someone send you a letter to show up in the mail?
I'm glad I'm with a true professional here. And we do love the email. Send your email to techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll cover them either on the show or I'll email you back. And, of course, you can always check out the Tech Talk homepage by going to techtalkonline.com. We got every show posted there all the way back to the year 2000.
And you are indeed listening to Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. We'll have more right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Dennis Crawley. Dennis Crawley is an internet entrepreneur and is best known for co-founding the popular social networking sites Dodgeball and Foursquare. I don't know much about Dodgeball, actually, but I've heard a lot about Foursquare. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of buzz going on with that. Dennis Crawley was born June 19th, 1976, in Medley, Massachusetts. Crawley graduated from Xavierian Brothers High School in Westwood, Massachusetts. In 1994, he received a Bachelor of Arts in Public Communication from Syracuse University in 1998. And then his mom said, now you're going to be launched, and I'm hoping you're going to make a bundle.
Right.
Okay, after graduating from Syracuse, he worked two jobs in New York City. One was at an internet research firm, and the other was at a tech startup. This was in 1998. Then in 2001, boom, the dot-com crash came, followed by 9/11.
Uh-huh.
And he lost both of his jobs in the summer of 2001. He was in New York City that summer. Then on September 11th, we had the 9/11 event, and jobs in New York City were not very hard to get. And so Dennis Crawley took a job as a snowboard instructor for the winter. He said,
well, he won't be doing that in New York, that's for sure.
No, he didn't. He had to go to Vermont. And so he said, well, Mom, I know you paid for my bachelor's at Syracuse University, but I'm darn good at snowboarding.
Uh-huh. Well, you got to do something to keep a roof over your head.
That's right. So then while he was there snowboarding, he says, might as well go back to school. And he started applying for business schools. Nobody would take him. I mean, he couldn't get into business. I guess probably at that time everybody was going back to business school. So they probably had this surge of unemployed unemployed techies going back to business school. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to go to tech school because of the dot-com crash. He said, okay, technology failed. I'll go to business. And then a friend, while he was, you know, trying this quest for business school, a friend said, hey, why don't you go to this weird art show at New York University's Tisch School of the Arts? So he said, okay, I'll go there. I like weird. So the first project that he saw was somebody who was making robots who follow robots who follow robots. So it was like a robot following chain. And it was kind of a recursive robot chain. And they had all these weird tech projects, which was kind of a melding of new technology and innovative thinking. He just loved the program. He loved the weirdness of all the technology applications. So he enrolled. He was inspired by emerging technology and by the Internet, and he liked to build things that people could use and get enjoyment out of. So he enrolled in the interactive telecommunications program at NYU called ITP, and he received a master's degree in 2004. Now, his thesis project at ITP was called Dodgeball. It was kind of an early version of Foursquare. When you have Dodgeball, you tell Dodgeball where you are, and they'll tell your friends where you are. So it was a way to kind of link up. You sort of log in your location with Dodgeball and say, oh, really? You know, you got a friend over here, you got a friend two blocks away, and then you could link up with your friends. You keep track of your friends using, you know, using the newly available GPS technology, which was on the phones, or you could actually tell it where you were if you didn't have a GPS phone. So then he thought, well, this is pretty good. And he decided after he did his thesis project, he said, why don't we make a company out of this? So he co-founded Dodgeball, the company, with a fellow student, Alex Rennert, in 2003 while they were still attending NYU. By the way, where'd the name come from? He liked playing dodgeball in elementary school. So he just said, well, I'll just name it Dodgeball. So it's named after that. You know, you've played dodgeball.
Sure. That's my favorite sport.
Yeah. So they went out and tried to raise money to fund his fledgling dodgeball company. And in the process of raising money, they ran across Google, and Google bought it. So he said, man, I've hit the mother load.
Mm-hmm.
So then he started working for Google, and he was there for a couple of years. It wasn't going very well. I don't think he liked the corporate scene. He quit after a couple of years, and by 2009, Google shut down Dodgeball.
Wow.
And they replaced it with Google Latitude, which is a sort of another, you know, location-specific right. application. After he left Google, he worked for his friend who had a small company for 8 months, and then he took a year off. His mom was getting a little worried about him.
Yeah.
You know, he has this, and he probably was back, you know, doing snowboard instruction. I don't know.
Can't imagine taking a year off.
Yeah, he took a year off just to sort of ponder the universe.
Yikes.
And ponder where he would fit into the universe. Then in 2009, Crawley and Naveen Selvadurai developed a second version of the original Dodgeball, which they called Foursquare.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Foursquare is now currently a very popular site. And you see, he did it in 2009. I think that's because that was the year that Google shut down Dodgeball. So we probably couldn't start Foursquare until they shut down Dodgeball.
Mm-hmm.
Probably kind of a legal deal there.
Right.
So Foursquare. And if you look up Foursquare the ball game, yeah. What,
well, I have Foursquare the website. Let me get Foursquare the ball game.
Foursquare the ball game. Yeah, it's played in a gym. So he named everything after these ball games, and I'll let you explain how Foursquare the ball game works once you find it there. And so then they started, and this was actually a location based networking website for mobile users. So users check in at venues using the mobile website, or they could do it by texting, or they could do it with an application which they load on their cell phone. And using GPS data, it finds out where you are. So if you check in a particular place, for instance, if you check in over a 60-day period more times to a particular location than any other user, you become mayor of that location. Did you find Foursquare the ball game?
Yeah. It's basically a game played on a square court with four people, one at each corner, and you have, you know, basically the dodgeball ball. I'm just trying to figure out what the rules are here and what the point of this is. Failing to hit the ball into the other square is a way to get eliminated. Hitting the ball out of turn, hitting the ball incorrectly, hitting it out of bounds, missing the ball from another player, letting the ball drop twice on another player's square. So basically, I guess you bat the ball back.
You bat
and
the
forth.
Ball back, and, yeah. then if somebody's eliminated, everybody moves up one,
right.
and then a new person comes in at square number one, and you just keep playing until you've got got king of the square.
Right, and the point here is that it doesn't require a whole lot of equipment, and it can be ended at any time. So
That's
it can last
right.
as long as you want, or not as long as you want.
So he named it after four square of the ball game,
mm-hmm.
and. Now users check in it, so users can go in. So like if you go back to your favorite Starbucks and you keep going back, you might be mayor of that Starbucks on Foursquare.
Mayor of Starbucks.
and now many companies now are taking advantage of this, and they'll have Foursquare features. So like if you visit them often enough, they'll give you a special discount for something.
Wow.
So they
cool.
keep track of it. Now Foursquare is funded by three VC firms, venture capital firms. They raised $1.35 million in Series A funding. They got $20 million in Series B funding. On June 24, 2011, Foursquare raised $50 million on a $600 million valuation. Okay.
Wow.
Okay, Mom. Dennis is beginning to get into the bus.
It's turning the corner
it's
here.
It's coming together for you, Mom, so just give him a little bit more time. Maybe he's going to get off the slopes and sort of bring in with the cash. Foursquare had over 10 million users as of June 2011 and currently has over 100 employees. In 2005, he was named to the MIT Technology Review TR35, which is one of the top 35 innovators in the world under age 35. Crowley was named to one of Fortune magazine's 40 Under 40 business's hottest rising stars in 2010. So Dennis Crowley seemed to have turned the corner.
Yeah.
And there's the man who started Foursquare. I don't use Foursquare because I don't like anything which tracks my location. So any of these GPS location services I simply don't subscribe to.
I know. It's funny how similar this actually looks to Facebook, the homepage of this thing. It's got these colors and fonts and
So there you go. Everything you want to know about Dennis Crowley, the co-founder of Foursquare.
Hope you were paying attention because your chance to win a fabulous prize of free food is coming up next by playing the pop quiz here on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here.
And I would be that aforementioned guy right here. My name is Jim Ross. I'm the adjunct professor for Easy Questions on the Pop Quiz. We just talked about Dennis Crowley, the co-founder of Dodgeball and Foursquare and Profiles in IT. After the 9/11 attacks, he was forced to take a job outside of his career path. If you can tell me what that job was, you will win a fantastic prize. Tickets for two, fine dining at the Escafe at Stratford University on the campus in Falls Church or at the campus in Woodbridge at Cafe Karim. If you have the answer to that question, you need to call me right now. If you're calling from west of Medley, Massachusetts, it's 877-936-9333. From east of Syracuse, New York, 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line is 877-936-9333. The Pop Quiz on Tech Talk Radio.
Here's the idea of the week, a speech jamming gun. Have you ever been at a meeting and there's somebody that just doesn't stop talking? Wouldn't you like just to point a device at them and they wouldn't be able to talk?
Why, yes, just the other day, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Or you could be in another situation, and you could be visiting relatives, and there could be a particular relative that just is talking way, way too much. I don't want to give any names. And then, bingo, you point that gun at them, and they can't speak. Well, two Japanese researchers recently produced a prototype of device that they call the speech jammer. They can literally jam someone's voice, effectively stopping them from talking, and they've now released a video of the device in action. So if you look up speech jamming gun YouTube, you can find that video. It's just fun to watch. The researchers released this video last Thursday and has gone viral. Now, the design is relatively simple. It consists of a direction-sensitive mic.
I'm sorry, I was just watching the video. It looks like they're trying to jam Snooki from Jersey Shore. What a perfect use for this device.
And it's so you point this directional mic at the person, and there's also a directional speaker. So as the person is talking, their voice is sent right back to them. It's reflected right back to them, but Jim's over there watching the video, this viral video.
I wish I could hear this, but it looks, it's not exactly a portable unit.
No, it's...
It looks like a microwave oven on a stick is what it looks like.
It's a prototype.
Yeah, okay.
It's a prototype. So what it is, it plays back the person's voice with a slight delay, around a 200 millisecond delay, and it turns out that if you hear your voice again with that 200 millisecond delay, you can't speak. Now, the Japanese researchers behind the speech jammers looked at medical devices used to help people with speech problems. And this delayed auditory feedback, as they call it, DAF, are used to help people who stutter. It's been used for decades. If a stutterer hears his own voice with a slight delay, the stuttering often improves. However, if you use delayed audio feedback to a non-stutterer, he'll start stuttering.
Like you're doing right now.
Yes, turn off that device.
For instance,
turn off that device.
You know, when you're on the cell phone and you're in a bad area, you start hearing your voice back. It's completely distracting, isn't it?
That's right.
Same sort of thing.
It's the same thing. So they use the delayed audio feedback, DAF, to develop a device that can remotely jam someone's speech, whether they want to or not. And being at a distance, the person doesn't even know what has hit them. So if you're bothered by someone speaking at a meeting, you could secretly point the jammer at them, and they wouldn't be able to talk. It's still a prototype, but I'm thinking there could be a real use for this device.
I'm thinking these people are onto something. We have our phone lines are jammed. This is really encouraging.
And this is just the kind of information that you get at Tech Talk that's great at a cocktail party, but probably not much use for anything else.
Well, that's why we're here.
And we are here every Saturday morning at 9. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology.
But I feel so real today, Doc.
I know, but you know, you can't let the virtual world become too real. That's what happened to this one woman. She was handcuffed and sent to jail for killing her virtual husband. Now, this was a 43-year-old Japanese woman. She's been jailed for killing her virtual husband to revenge an unexpected virtual divorce.
Oh, boy.
Now, the unhappy couple's characters had been married in the Korean massive multiplayer game Maple Story. Now, she was arrested on Wednesday on the suspicion of illegally accessing a computer and manipulating electronic data. Police claim she used the man's identification and password in order to log into her former husband's account, virtual account, and delete the character.
Whoops.
She said, "I was suddenly divorced without even a word of warning. That made me so angry."
Yeah, I bet.
She told the police officer. The 33-year-old office worker contacted the police, this was the man, when he discovered that his character was missing in mid-May. He is believed to have freely given the woman his Maple Story password in an earlier date when the two were joyously married in e-marital bliss.
Oh, no.
That's like giving her the key to the apartment. He gave her the password to his account. After her arrest, the woman was taken some 620 miles from her home in southern Japan, to Sapporo, where the man lives. She hasn't been formally charged, but AP reports that she could face a prison term and up to 5 years in prison or a fine of $5,000 if convicted of killing her virtual husband.
She didn't really kill him. The actual human being is still alive.
No, the actual human being is alive.
The virtual version.
She deleted the virtual version of her husband online. And, of course, then all the history was gone. So the guy felt like he had really lost something.
Yeah.
And maybe he had more than one girlfriend. See, we don't really know the whole story.
We don't know the whole story.
He might have had more than one wife.
What do we know?
We have no idea what was going on.
We know this much. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Is that
correct?
That's
exactly right. Now,
that's right. My favorite thing that we do here.
We can talk about
food science.
Exactly.
Yep.
In honor of the award-winning Culinary Arts Department.
Yes.
Now, today we're going to talk about hot sauces and where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
Now, hot sauces have been around since humans first realized that they could eat peppers.
Well...
Bottles containing hot sauces have been recovered from archaeological digs as well as from shipwrecks,
mm-hmm.
going back at least 400, 500 years.
Mm-hmm.
Advertisements for cayenne sauces from cayenne peppers appeared in Massachusetts newspapers and city directories as early as 1807. Sometime between 1840 and 1860, J. McCulloch and Company of New York produced bird pepper sauce, which was made with wild chilies called chiltepins or bird peppers.
Mm-hmm.
In 1849, England's Lee and Perrins Worcestershire sauce was first imported into the United States from Great Britain.
Worcestershire sauce makes everything taste better, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Many of the first homegrown hot sauces in the United States came from the South. From the southern Cajun cuisine,
mm-hmm.
and other fiery ethnic foods fueled with hot sauces. One of the first mass-produced domestic hot sauces was Edmund McKinley's Tabasco brand pepper sauce in 1849.
Yep, McElhaney's, that's some
McElhaney's,
good stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In 1859, White manufactured and advertised the first hot sauce about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this White gave some of his chilies to who he thought was his best friend, Edmund McElhaney, who then promptly planted those same pepper seeds on his plantation in Avery Island, Louisiana. And then in 1868, Edmund first bottled his Tabasco sauce in recycled cologne bottles. The McElhenney Company trademarked the name Tabasco, which is why only Tabasco sauce is the only Tabasco sauce on the market today. It actually refers to a geographic and political region in Mexico where the Tabasco pepper is said to have originated. Similar sauces are made with Tabasco peppers, but they can only be called hot sauce. Jacob, you know, I like to call, you know...
Yeah, it becomes like Xerox. It becomes kind of
it,
a...
It becomes a
umbrella
Xerox
term.
Yeah, I like to call Tabasco Kickapoo Joy Juice. Now, Jacob Frank started selling Frank's Red Hot Cayenne Pepper Sauce in 1920, and it was this hot sauce that French's, the current owner of Frank's, proclaimed as the secret ingredient in the original buffalo wings that were concocted in 1964 at the Anchor Bar and Grill in Buffalo, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been to that Anchor Bar and Grill in Buffalo, New York, and had some of those original peppers.
I have seen them featured on the Food Network. Quite a place.
It's Saturday morning, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. Learn more about this program by going to techtalkonline.com, and learn more about our sponsors at stratford.edu. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
You ever wondered about time? I mean...
All the time.
Well, see, I mean, we're sitting in here. We've got the 60-minute clock. We've got the 60-second minute. We've got everything on 60s here, but we've got a 24-hour day. So where did that all come from? Well, let's go back to the 24 hours in the day.
Okay.
Back in the 1500 B.C., that would be 1,500 years before Christ, the Egyptians developed the advanced sundial.
Is that the one that had the digital readout on it?
No, the advanced sundial actually divided the day into 12 parts.
Really?
Yeah, and so they from sunrise to sunset was divided into 12 parts. You see, the Egyptians liked 12 as that was the base numbering system that they used, base 12.
Mm-hmm.
That's called the duodecimal system. Now, there are a number of reasons why they might have liked 12. One reason is there are 12 joints in your fingers. You've got three joints in each of your four fingers. One, two, three. You've got.
Did they have no thumbs? Is that what
No.
Your four fingers?
No.
I was
you use the thumb to count the joints.
There was a lot of inbreeding among
so the thumb doesn't count.
The thumb doesn't count. You use the thumb to point at the joints of the other four fingers, and by pointing at the joints of your other four fingers, you can come up to 12. So instead of counting with, so that way you can count to 12 with one hand, instead of having to count to, if you count your fingers, it takes two hands to count to 10.
Unless, of course, you've been involved in a tragic mortar and pestle accident and lost part of a finger.
That was one theory why the Egyptians used base 12. Now, the other theory was that there are 12 lunar months in a year. So they thought,
we got to go back.
I think it's more the 12. I'm in favor of the 12 joint theory for base 12. So they divided the day up into 12 parts, but of course at night. The sundial doesn't work.
That's why they invented the indigo dial for the sundial.
So then what they had to do,
the lunar dial.
Astronomers selected 24 stars, actually, 12 of them which were visible at night, and they marked the passage of time at night as each one of these stars would come up out of the horizon. So they divided the night up into 12 parts, too, based on the movement of stars. Now, here's the interesting thing.
The hour, the length of an hour would vary as the day would get longer.
Really?
You see, because
oh, right. Because
it was 12
they're working with night and dark, right?
Yeah, and so you see, so in the summer, the day is longer, so it's still only 12 hours, so the hours were longer. The concept of a constant hour didn't appear for a long time. But you see, we began to get the rudiments of 12 intervals in the day and 12 intervals at night. And so finally, we did not get mechanical clocks until around the 14th century.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until the 14th century, almost 3,000 years after the Egyptians came up with the deal, that we ended up with a constant clock with a constant hour each day.
That's interesting. So really, during the summertime for the Egyptians, the clock slowed down during the daylight
hours. It slowed down. So they actually had daylight savings time
without even doing anything.
Now let's talk about now. But why are there 60 minutes in an hour?
Why are there 60 minutes in an
now,
hour?
Now see, this is the other
why
thing.
Why are there 60 minutes?
Okay, now you've heard of the Babylonians.
Yes, I have.
Now the Babylonians weren't into this base 12. They were more base 60.
Does that mean they had bigger brains?
I don't know why they had base 60, really, but everything. Now, they inherited this numbering system from the Sumerians. Now, the Babylonians lived, of course, in Mesopotamia. That was the region between the Tigris and Euphrates.
Right. Iraq.
Which is now Iraq. Naveed, I was trying to avoid that point, but it's okay. It's now Iraq. And so what were there? I guess were they doing research there in Iraq, you know.
Or something like that.
So they basically worked. They were very big in maps and computation, and they came up with all sorts of methods for measuring geographical coordinates. They actually divided a circle into 60 parts, and that was the earliest known geographic system for latitude. Now, later on, they developed the concept of latitude and longitude. They devised, finally, a method to divide a circle into 360 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
This came out of the Babylonians, which is basically 6 times 60, 360 degrees. Each degree they divided into 60 parts, which they called minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Each minute they divided into 60 parts, which they called seconds. So the original idea of minutes and seconds came out of basically geography.
And I was going to say, and we still use this system today.
And so what happened when they came up with the mechanical clock in the 14th century, they basically had the hands went around a circle. So they divided the circle up. They, of course, had the 12-hour clock or the 24-hour clock, but then they further divided it up into minutes. And so they said, well, we want each hour to be 60. So we want to have 60 minutes in each hour, and we want to have 60 seconds in each minute. And that came out of the Babylonian method. So our current time system is based on a hybrid between the Egyptians and the Babylonians.
This is your classroom of the airwaves, Tech Talk Radio, heard every Saturday at 9 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Now let's talk about marinades.
Yes.
There was an article, what kicked me off on this, looking at this, there was an article that came out in the Post last week titled, The Myth About Marinades. It was a flavor bath in a flash, as he said. It was Andreas Vistad. I read this article about marinades, and it sort of got me to look at the science of marinades. Now, what Andreas said was that, contrary to popular belief, marinades actually don't penetrate the meat.
Really?
You could, so there's this myth, you leave it on for 4 hours or overnight, and it penetrates. He said the amount of penetration of the marinade is minuscule.
and that, in fact, you get most of the value when you just coat the meat immediately. There's almost zero value leaving it on for a long time.
No kidding.
So that is one of the big myths of marinades. The second myth is that marinades help tenderize the meat. There's nothing in a marinade that tenderizes the meat. It turns out that...
Unless you use napalm.
It turns out that tenderizers that are like that you officially get has enzymes, and there are enzymes that will break down the connective tissue of the meat, and so you can, historically people have wrapped meat in papaya leaves because there's a chemical in papaya that actually is an enzyme that will break down the meat. There's also these meat tender, like Adolph's meat tenderizer. They have an actually.
I always
enzyme.
Wonder what is in that.
They actually have an enzyme in it. It's a protein digesting enzyme, and it breaks down connective tissue. And this papaya, and the thing which is in papaya leaves is called papaine, and it was developed in pre-Columbian Mexico. And so now, if you allow like beef to sit at room temperature while it's marinating or just in the refrigerator for 12 or 18 hours, it will tend to age, and you do have natural enzymes in the meat that will tend to break down the connective tissue. That's why you have aged beef, and so you will get some tenderizing there. So it doesn't tenderize, and you can just put it on in just a few minutes. Now, you could take, some people take and pierce the meat with a fork to try to get the marinade to go down deeper, but then the problem with that is when you cook the meat, the moisture comes out, and so you have a drier piece of meat. And so it's a net loss.
It's counterproductive.
It's counterproductive when you try to do that.
Well, now, the Adolph's meat, if you put that on your hand, will your hand turn into tapioca or something?
I don't think so. I don't think that works that way.
There's no warning on that.
No, there's nothing like that. Well, there are three main components in marinade. Let's get to the chemistry of marinades now. Anyway, that article is what triggered this whole thing. There are three main components in marinade. A, you need acid. B, you need fat. And C, you need flavor.
Okay.
Now, the acid is the most important element because it tends to break down the muscle and the proteins. It does help condition the meat. It also imparts a flavor. Now, the examples of acids that you can use would be tomatoes, citrus fruits, pineapple, papaya, vinegar, wine, beer, hard booze, buttermilk, or yogurt. Now I tend to use balsamic.
Beer,
I use balsamic vinegar in most of mine. And but I'm thinking wine is not a bad option. Now papaya, of course, does have some of that enzyme, which will give you some of the tenderizing section. Now you need, in addition to the acid, you need a few tablespoons of oil, which would be the fat. And you could use sesame oil, olive oil, walnut oil. Those will also impart kind of a flavor. Vegetable oil, it will give you oil without a flavor. Now, the flavoring is where you get, and so you add a little bit of acid, a little bit of fat, you might add a little water. Then you can add the flavor, and this is where you can add all kinds of things. There are four basic flavor categories that you can assemble to make your marinade, and it's nice if you layer them so you have multiple tastes. You could have sweet, heat, salt, or savory.
Huh.
Sweet would be sugar, honey, molasses, or any other sweetener can bring out the savory qualities of the dish. The heat could be from paprika to red pepper flakes to sliced chilies or hot sauce like Tabasco sauce. So you add a little bit of sweet and then you taste the heat. You see, you want to layer the flavors. Now, salt is an important element of many marinades. You need about at least a teaspoon of salt for every pound and a half of meat. Now, your salt could be soy sauce, if you want to use that, or it could just be regular salt. You could use fish salts, smashed anchovies, you could use olives or capers.
The anchovies.
Yeah, I'm going to keep the anchovies. I don't want those. Now, savory is any other kind of spices. You could use rosemary, thyme, bay leaf, or lemon zest, onions, garlic, ginger root, pureed fruit. Any of these other flavors. So, what you basically do, you just take your acid to pick what acid you want. You add your fat, add a little water, and then just pick the flavor. Make your own marinade up.
So the salt really is just for flavor. It has nothing to do with any of the chemical.
No, salt's just one of the flavors. And so the marinade, it doesn't. So actually, according to Andreas, and I actually read a lot of research where people had measured the diffusion of marinades into meat. You can just throw the marinade on for just a short time. It turns out the marinade through capillary action goes into every nook and cranny, and so you actually get very excellent coverage with the marinade, and you get that in the first 10 seconds. The other nice thing about the oil is that when you throw it on a hot grill, the oil keeps the meat from sticking initially. Now, and then, of course, if you're making a steak, you want to use the Maillard reaction to get the flavor, which is what browns the meat.
We talked about that last
week.
It's
the mixture. It's when you have protein and sugar browned, and that's above 140 degrees.
That's it for this week. See you next week on Tech Talk Radio.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT-FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy.